Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So Tim Swartz is our guest co-host again this week. Before we get to our very, very special guest, Mark Holley, who is the author of Crystal Skulls and Human Heads, The Mystical History of Glass and the Extinction of the World. And right now, with all the things happening around the world, you wonder if that extinction isn't coming soon. But that's not part of this title. That's actually another line we can ask Philip Mantle to add to it, but he won't do that. So he's sensible about it. This is, by the way, Mark's maiden voyage on Skype. He has used Zoom up to now for connections, and somehow he's worked it out. Sometimes we have people, even experienced people, that we use Skype, and they run into problems. Like, an example would be Jacques Vallée. Now, Jacques is a computer wizard. Okay, he's one of the fathers or grandfathers of the Internet, in addition to his studies of the paranormal. But when we try to talk to him by Skype, we could either talk to him by Skype or our guest co-host, that was Kurt Collins. And so we had to stick with Jacques. Kurt, of course, understood he had to play second fiddle. That's how it goes. In any case, before we get started with Mark and the book about crystal skulls, I got this press release from an old friend of ours, Stan Gordon. He is a crack UFO paranormal investigator from Western Pennsylvania, and in fact, he'll be back on the PowerCast in May. But this is something, Tim, we want to talk about quickly, because we're waiting, of course, for any new news from the government about UFOs or UAPs. But the headline from Stan Gordon's UFO Anomaly Zone site, which is stangordon.info, UFO sightings in Pennsylvania on the rise since the fall of 2021 and continuing into 2022. What do you make of that, Tim?
Well, the people, skeptics that come out, and you know, you see this several times a year, you know, UFO reports declining across the world. And you know, I often have to wonder where they get this information from, because from all the statistics and polls and just all the various UFO grouping centers that I visit on an almost daily basis, always seems to show increases in UFO sightings all over the place, you know, especially, you know, the ones that you see that are categorized in the United States by state. So it doesn't surprise me in the least. You know, Pennsylvania has always had a rich history in UFO activity, cryptids, and other weird things. So I mean, if you run across, anyone in our audience runs across an article, you know, that says that, you know, UFO reports are declining, so thus UFOs aren't real, then, you know, you just have to, you know, shake your head and move on.
Well, one thing, of course, is I lived in Pennsylvania for some of the most interesting years of my life. And I remember fall 73, suddenly, out of the blue, UFO sightings. In fact, the management at the radio station at which I was working was really nice about it. You know, they had this UFO guy there who was news director of the radio station. I was also publishing a UFO paranormal magazine with my first wife, Geneva. And yet, he didn't mind or didn't notice or whatever. And so we covered the UFO beat. So, yes, there's always something fascinating. And, you know, when you interview Stan, you say, Stan, what's new? And then you have to simply relax for the next 2 hours.
Yes, he always is a plethora of interesting new information. And I should point out, Gene, that 1973 was really probably the last official UFO flap year in the United States. I mean, you know, there have been minor flaps, but 73, I mean, they were just all over the place. You know, I live in Indiana, and there's a couple states over from Pennsylvania. You know, the UFOs were literally raining down from the skies that year.
Well, I can't say that subsequent flaps have been flops because that would be a hard pun.
Yeah, say it five times fast.
Backwards.
Yeah, old guys, no.
Mark, like this UFO chatter may not be on your radar, but have you had an interest in UFOs?
Yes. It's funny you should mention 1973. The 70s for me was quite eventful UFO-wise. We had quite a few sightings over here. I did a lot of archaeology work then, especially in the late 70s. I was sort of an older teenager then, being out and about on site and what have you, and sleeping in tents under the stars. You got to see an awful lot of very strange things whizzing around in the sky. But the best one of all was quite a famous one. We have a UFO hunter over here by the name of Jenny Randalls. A book was produced called Mysteries of the Mid-Mersey Valley, and it featured this UFO on the front cover that came between Liverpool and Manchester. It travelled up the Mersey Valley in 1978. And it passed through the steam on a power station, so it was quite obviously nothing that we had in terms of vehicles. And I saw it as it came up the valley here and went through the steam, and then it travelled quite a few miles up to Warrington and then vanished off into the sky. And the interesting thing is, 11 years later after that, there was reports then coming out of people seeing it over on the Wirral, which is way beyond Liverpool, and then it arrived apparently out to sea. So about 34 years after I saw it, somebody contacted me to try and write it up as an encounter, and I managed to piece together all the bits. So we could actually work out where it came from, where it went, how long it was visible, and how it travelled. So at some point, no doubt, that will surface in the UFO community as a sighting from the 70s. But I saw quite a lot back in the 1970s. I'm actually an enormous fan of UFOs. There is an honourable mention in Crystal Skulls and Human Heads. The last section in the book is called Alien Heads. So it does get a mention there, and I have actually been called in to examine debris that a UFO group recovered from a crash in Wales, and I've got a small piece of that in my office still to this day. So I've had quite a lot of connection through the UFO community.
All right, stop the presses. A UFO crash in Wales.
Yeah.
We've got to know this.
If you do a search for a program called Europe's Roswell, it came out on Reality Films back in, I think it was 1997. We were looking at the anniversary of the crash. It crashed in 1983 originally, so I think it would be the 15-year anniversary. Something came down near Aberystwyth in North Wales, Llanillar, overnight and scattered debris over three farmers' fields. And the farmer, of course, reported it to the local airbase and said, you know, what's the idea here? What's going on? They sent out a team, and then they were followed by a crash recovery team, which then did an enormous clear-up and removed all this debris. But a friend of mine went in, you know, sort of a few days after that, and managed to get some very large pieces of fuselage out of the forest, the woods. By large, I mean sort of, you know, about 12 inches, your metric, aren't you? 30 centimetres by about 15 centimetres. Quite a large pieces, and some foil and a lot of other bits and bobs. So enough to fill a small case anyway. And it was sent away for analysis. Turned out that the metallic part of it was duralumin. But the rubberized surface and the resins used in it, nobody could identify at the time back in the 1990s. So I was hoping I'd be able to sort of, you know, go in there and dig a crashed UFO up out of the field, you know, but no, that was never going to happen. It hit trees, it smashed, it scattered all this debris and it flew off, and then the debris was cleaned up. But the program's out there, Europe's Roswell, and we have Amazon Prime over here, so I think it's still on Amazon Prime if people want to go and look it up.
Called Europe's Roswell. It was dated 13th May 2013. I do my research, sir.
That's what
and
it went up.
From Mark Ali, and it's 55 minutes long. So this is interesting. Yeah. I'm going to ask you a couple more questions before we get into Crystal Skulls. You never know. They may be related. Mark Ali is author of a new book called Crystal Skulls and Human Heads, The Mystical History of Glass. and the extinction of the world. Is that dramatic enough? I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I was going for.
Oh, sure. With Gene and Mark and Tim, you're in.
The Paracast.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
You trust your mother, right? She's always taken care of you and always tried to give you good advice when you ask for it. And sometimes even when you don't. Well, even though she might not mention it, Mom very likely has neck, back, and shoulder pains. And she needs relief. So trust this good advice. Give back to Mom this Mother's Day with quality products from Sunny Bay. Like our disposable heat patches. They're back in stock now and target neck and shoulder pain in adults of all ages. Or our extra long neck heating pads. They provide soothing relief to painful sore necks and backs. Mom can heat them in her microwave, and they come in a variety of colors and patterns. Read our trusted, authentic, and real reviews on Amazon when you search Sunny Bay Heating Wraps. And shop now in time for Mother's Day. There's no shipping delays from Sunny Bay. Find us on Amazon, Walmart, Etsy, and sunny-bay.com. Remember, just search for Sunny Bay Neck Wraps. Order now because stock is high and shipping is fast. From Sunny Bay.
Hi, this is Dr. Joel Wallach, the mineral doctor. You've heard me talk about 90 for life for years. 60 minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 2 fatty acids. You may not know this, that I've actually designed Arthrodex for animals. That's right. Your pets need 90 for life, too. Get this essential pet product by calling 877-279-9422. That's 877-279-9422. Again, 877-279-9422.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
Ouch. The IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So how'd it go for Jake?
Did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.
Hey, Jimmy, turn off the video games. Let's go play some ball.
I'm in the middle of my game. Can't we go later?
Come on, it'll be fun. It will be there when you get back.
Okay, but there's no way you're going to win.
Why don't you grab some water and granola bars, and then we'll see about that.
You can make a difference. Eat smart, play hard. And when you do, your kids will too. A challenge from USDA.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
All right, Mark Olley, the main topic will be crystal skulls and human heads, but right now we're looking at a documentary he did for Mark Olley's Untold Tales, called Europe's Roswell. But now, how do you pronounce the name of that town again?
It's Clonilla. It's called Clonillar. It's a small village outside Aberystwyth in Wales. Welsh is quite a language to get your head round.
I can see that, but we get all these great actors who are Welsh.
Ah, you do indeed. Anthony Hopkins is one that springs to mind. Yeah.
Christian Bale.
Christian Bale, yeah, that's another
sure,
one.
Batman. Batman is British. But then we have to look at the fact that the subsequent Batman, Robert Pattinson, is also British.
I think it's the accent, you know, the kind of, hello, I'm Batman. It always seems to sound better in English somehow, you know.
Yeah, but Michael Keaton did I'm Batman very well.
He did.
In fact, some people say he's the best. Michael Keaton's from Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I was going to say, without getting too much into the debate, he really did a very good job. Very good job indeed. Yeah.
And nobody believed, because he did comedy movies, that he could take on a serious, dark role like that. That's a predecessor to Dark Knight.
Yes.
But other than the over-the-top performance of Jack Nicholson as Joker, Michael Keaton nailed Batman. Totally.
It was very strong, but as I recall, that series of movies were very colourful. They were very over-the-top. That's the ones with the Joker and Mr. Freeze and what have you in it, isn't it? I remember them. Very over-the-top.
Well, the first two were the ones that were best.
Yeah.
Batman and Batman Returns with Michael Keaton. When the role went to Val Kilmer and then George Clooney, it didn't have that spark. Again,
no.
The darkness of Batman.
Yeah.
Conveyed by a few actors. Ben Affleck does it well as an aging Batman, I think. But certainly Christian Bale and Robert Pattinson.
One of the early ones that featured the Penguin. Which one was the one that first featured the Penguin?
That would be in the 60s, the Batman show. But no, that was more like a comedy.
The first movie of the new series had the Penguin in.
That would have been the second one with Michael Keaton.
Yes.
With Tim Burton as the director.
Right.
On
okay, talk about the movies,
the
yes.
I went to see that at the cinema, and everybody sat there and watched that particular film, and it was quite dramatic, because when the film ended, everybody just shuffled out in silence. It was like they'd just witnessed a funeral. You know, I think everyone was just shocked. They were all gothicked out. You know, it was just incredible. The atmosphere at the end of the movie was interesting. Yeah. I'm a big fan of Tim Burton, so, yeah.
Michelle Pfeiffer was Catwoman. And I think she was one of the best. She's an amazing actress. Anyway, let's get into Mark Olley's background.
Okay.
You're in the music business and you're also in the archaeological business. How do we put the two together?
Wow. It all goes way back to the 1970s when I hadn't got the foggiest idea what to do when it came to leaving school. So I left school. I went to art college. While I was at art college, I was working with various bands and musical collectives, and eventually, by default, I ended up in a recording studio. But at the same time as going to art college, the local museum was immediately across the road, and I'd always had a very, very long-standing interest in archaeology and history. It kind of runs in the family, because my dad was an archaeological digger before me. So I was going to night school, I was learning archaeology, I was doing archaeological digs. You know, it took care of most of my summers, right up into the 1980s, did some amazing things, found some amazing things. But at the same time as doing that, as a day job, if you like, I also got picked up as a session drummer. And by sort of early 80s again, I had a record deal and I was working in the music business. So as archaeology then slowly faded out in the mid-80s, I then went off and did my stint, if you like, in the music business. I was there for about 20 years, I think, in all, as a drummer. And to some extent as a producer, because you learn as you go along. And I was in quite big demand. But then I had a back injury in the 1990s, so I decided I was going to retire. And the obvious thing to do was to go back to archaeology and history. So back I went. So the two have always been there side by side. The back injury has actually not proven to be as much of an obstacle as I thought it was going to be. I ended up doing a TV series, writing loads and loads of books, and I'm back again working with bands again. So I'm in a band now at the moment, which I think has a combined age of about 240. We're all old guys now. But we still seem to be banging out the same kind of good old rock and roll we used to do. We're a little bit like Nirvana and Nickelback. We're sort of in that kind of bracket. And it's actually all right. People are saying, wow, you know, this is really commercial. We've not heard anything like this for so long. And so you never know. You might hear a bit more of us as time goes on.
Well, 70 and 80-year-old drummers seem to do very well, at least.
Yeah, well, I'm actually not the I'm not the oldest member of the band. There are members of the band older than me. I'm not 60 till later this year, so I'm the junior. I'm the new boy.
Ahmed,
the young Turk.
That's the one. I suppose it helps being a drummer. I don't think I'll ever get to the age of Charlie Watts and still be hitting things. I think that's probably taking it a bit far.
Well, look at Ringo Starr. He's 81. He's still pounding away.
Well, yeah, Liverpool. It's only down the road from where I am here. Yeah, he's a Merseycat and I'm a Merseycat because we both got signed in bands that were associated with Liverpool. So there's like this association, about 600-odd musicians that were involved in that. So, yeah, I don't get to see him very often. I'm not famous enough.
Have you ever seen Ringo? I mean, never met him.
I think I met him at a presentation in Liverpool. Yeah, I think I did at some point. I've met tons of famous people, but I'm really, really not the sort of person that name drops. You've got to sort of compartmentalise what you do as well, because the community I'm part of now, which is writing history, archaeology, and steadily more into the paranormal and UFO investigation scene, is not the same as the music business that I was part of back then. So, and also I was on the other side of the fence, if you like. I was behind the scenes more than anything else. So they didn't really matter who you bumped into, because we were all just doing the same job anyway at the end of the day. We're all just musicians. It's very hard, I think, for people that sort of put people on pedestals. It's hard to understand what happens when you cross that, I don't know, star barrier or whatever you want to call it, personality barrier, which I crossed in the music business. But now I'm just me. I'm plain old me.
In our next segment, by the way, we're going to talk more about the crystal skulls. And I'll begin that with a background of where we've talked about crystal skulls up to now in the PowerCast, and then we'll get into your stuff. And as you'll realize, it's been a number of years since we've talked about crystal skulls. I don't pretend to be an expert on the subject, but this is something that we're going to really want to explore, because we haven't done it in so many years on the show. And we also will be keeping Mark around for the After the PowerCast podcast, part of the PowerCast.plus. Mark Ali is the author of a very recent book from Philip Mantle's Flying Disc Press, Crystal Skulls and Human Heads, The Mystical History of Glass, and the Extinction of the World? Whoa! With Gene and Tim, you're in
the PowerCast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
USA Radio News with Kenneth Burns.
President Biden from Warsaw pledging his support for Ukraine. He's also rallying the world to support the country who has been invaded by Russia.
Let us resolve to put the strength of democracies into action to thwart the designs of our autocracy. Let us remember that the test of this moment is the test of all time.
The speech comes as Russia is signaling that it is implementing a new strategy in its invasion of Ukraine. But special advisor at the White House National Security Council, Matthew Miller, tells ABC's Good Morning America that the Biden administration is not focused on Russia's words.
We always wait to see what Russia actually does, not just take for granted what it actually says, because from the beginning of this conflict, they have never been honest about their aims.
Miller adds that while the U.S. was warning of a Russia invasion, the Kremlin accused America of fear-mongering. This is USA Radio News. The Biden administration is calling for tougher sanctions against North Korea. Pyongyang test-fired its biggest intercontinental ballistic missile to date. Kim Jong-un says his country's preparing for what it called a long-standing confrontation with the United States. The call for sanctions happened during Friday's meeting of the UN Security Council. The Assembly of First Nations in Canada is expecting nothing less than a public apology from the Vatican. This after last year's discovery in British Columbia of about 200 unmarked and previously undocumented graves of children at what was Canada's largest Indigenous residential school. A meeting between the First Nations and Vatican is set for next week. Indigenous children were forced to go to state-funded Christian schools through the 1970s. Tyree Sampson, who died on an amusement ride in Florida late Thursday, is being remembered. The 14-year-old fell to his death on the Orlando Freefall at Icon Park. The ride had only been in operation for a few months. You're listening to USA Radio News.
I am a non-attorney spokesperson representing a team of lawyers who help people that have been injured or wronged. If you've been involved in a serious car, truck, or motorcycle accident or injured at work, you have rights and you may be entitled to money for your suffering. Don't accept an offer you get from an insurance company until you talk to a lawyer. And we represent some of the best personal injury lawyers you can find. Tough lawyers that will fight to win your case. And they're so good they stake their reputation on it by only getting paid if you win. So if you've been in a serious car, truck, or motorcycle accident or hurt on the job, find out today for free what kind of compensation you may be entitled to. Call the legal helpline right now.
800-509-4492. 800-509-4492. 800-509-4492. That's 800-509-4492.
This is Jerome Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
Now, let's talk a little bit here about a subject we haven't dealt with very much on the Paracast over the years. Crystal skulls. And let me refresh the memory of longtime listeners, okay? So on May 29th, 2011, Joshua Shapiro was here to talk about crystal skulls. We then had Stephen Mailer, who is an archaeologist, and we talked to him about crystal skulls, okay? And one or two other shows, but these are the ones most recent, 2011. Before we get on, Mark Ollie, have you heard of these people?
Yes, I have. During the course of research, I've come across work by both of those authors and quite a lot of others. Yes.
Okay, the problem has been with crystal skulls is the feeling that some people may be, shall we say, being something paranormal. Anytime we've gotten into a crystal skull discussion in the Paracast forums, it has gotten very contentious. Why should that be, Mark?
Well, I think the problem with the crystal skulls, certainly since the 1970s, is that there are literally thousands and thousands of them coming out of various workshops in different parts of the world, and it's become increasingly more difficult to authenticate any of them as being old or ideally pre-Columbian. So it's just a difficult issue. I think if you go far enough back and you start to look at some of the ones in museum collections, and there's only a very small number of them, I think there's just over a dozen of them. There's the British Museum one, there's the Mitchell Hedges one, there's a couple in France, in Paris, and then one or two dotted around the rest of the world. I think if you start looking at the older ones, most of them can be certainly traced back to the early Victorian era, early 19th century. And a lot of them seem to have come through the same dealer in Paris, who was famous for selling South American goods, South American antiquities. And the thing with the dealer is that all the other things that he ever sold were always genuine. So when they've analysed some of the crystal skulls from museums and they said, oh, well, you know, they show Victorian machine marks, Victorian tool marks and things like that, so they can't possibly be old. But to balance up against that, you've got this thing that this particular dealer only sold real stuff. So if these things do turn out, in inverted commas, fake, then it's because they were manufactured in South America, because the stone, we can identify the crystal they're made from, and most of them do originate from South America, so we can at least track that back. But that would make most of them no older than about 250 years, maybe 300 years tops. Worldwide, in an archaeological context, if you actually want to say how many crystal skulls can we actually nail down that have appeared in archaeological records, staggeringly, there are two. There are only two.
Excuse me, all the stuff we hear about crystal skulls and there are only two?
Well, and it gets worse than that. One of them was only found in the 1990s, and it sits in the palm of your hand. It's only a small quartz crystal skull, and that was found from an archaeological context belonging to the Aztecs, Mexico City. So that was found, it was identified, it went into the archaeological record, and it's very difficult to get any more information than that because they don't want to tell anybody where it was found. The other one, which is in the book, appears in the centre of the ball court at Coba. One of the ball courts that they excavated in the jungle city of Coba has this white quartz skull lying on its back flat in the ball court, and it's staring up towards the sky. And that one is quite definitely an authentic quartz crystal skull, and it's there in the ball court where it was originally found. Apart from that, all the others, there's a huge amount of debate over them and where they come from. The one that always impresses me is the Mitchell Hedges skull, which is the one with the jawbone that is separate, because they got that under an electron microscope and had a look for manufacturing marks on that one and didn't actually find any. So that would tell me that that was perhaps the one that is the oldest, because it's obviously been worn by being handled, etc. And it's also the one that took the most care and attention to produce. There's every reason to believe there should be more of them. But I spoke to an archaeologist who didn't really want to be identified, but over in South America. I've been over to South America. I've talked to him over there. And basically what he said was, within the archaeological community in South America now, if they do find anything relating to crystals and what have you, it tends not to get reported or broadcast. He said if ever we did find any of the skulls, or no, actually his wording was different. He said, no, if we had found any of the skulls, they would be national treasures, and we wouldn't really tell anybody about that because they would be far too valuable and far too sought after. And of course, there's always the risk out there that the sites will be ransacked or, you know, interfered with by looters and people like that. So they tend to be quite secretive about it. But just again, I've got one. I've been Colombian. The one I've got here, right back. But it's about 500 to 700 years. It's not enormously old by archaeological standards. But that also appears in the book. There's a photograph of that in there. So yeah. There's not that many of them, so Bastian, I think that's probably why people doubted where they sort of feature, where they figure in the greater scheme of things, the human head. And crystal skulls is one of the sections of it. Crystal is, which is the same as glass. So as soon as you start looking at the connections between the human head, humans, silica, the planet around us and how it's full of glass, which then leads you on to other things, you start to get some amazing connections coming out. That's really where the second half of the book goes. The first half of the book is looking at prehistoric remains, and different human species, which are starting to emerge from the discipline of DNA, and the way that skulls and remains are found and the way they're dated, and it kind of goes down that avenue. So really, if you like, it's a journey in time and space and science and pseudoscience, as some people would call it. It's an exploration in all those matters, using the human head as the theme, as the key to guide us through the exploration of the different issues that we run across. That's it in essence. I hope that answered the question.
You know, I found that part of the book, dealing with human heads, to be, you know, absolutely fascinating, because there is an almost universal constant when it comes to the human head and with people's fascination with it. And I mean fascination almost right from the beginning of recorded and pre-recorded history.
Absolutely, absolutely. We had this thing in the 70s and 80s where everyone was in technology and the knowledge of Atlantis and the wisdom of Atlantis and, wow, let's go and find something that's pre-flood, you know, what's common to, you know, everywhere. The sort of ultimate outworking of that has ended up being things like, well, everywhere's got pyramids. You know, there's pyramids all over the planet. Everywhere seems to get metalworking at roughly the same time. Prehistoric technology generally seems to be uniform right across the board. And the one of the other ones is the human head. This idea of the human head. If anyone wants to dash out and buy one of my other books, Revealing the Green Man, that looks at more or less the prehistoric view of the head in terms of the foliate face, the green man, the power of nature, the spirit, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, that's probably a topic for a different show. But that research then feeds into the crystal skulls and human heads. But like you say, it's there in every single culture, and it seems to be the same understanding and the same knowledge and the same information uniform across the board. So if somebody wanted to add to that, you know, I mean, standing stones and things like that, that all seem to be common everywhere, all over the world in prehistory.
Let's break here, Mark. We'll come with Mark Ollie, Gene, and Tim. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there's The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at rockoids.com. That's rockoids, rockoids.com.
Hi, I'm your host, Smokey Colbert, filling in for Smokey, because after 75 years of
only you can prevent wildfires,
turns out there's much more to say. Nearly 90% of wildfires are caused by us humans being careless, dumping our used barbecue coals willy-nilly. Guess the song was wrong. We did start the fire. That's why I respect Mother Nature and her trees, whether coniferous or new car scented. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
You don't sit behind a desk every day to earn a living. You're out and about making it happen. And sometimes you get a little bit behind on your paperwork, you know, like bookkeeping and paying your taxes. It's easy to get behind on paying your taxes. It happens to the best of us. And you know what happens next. The big bad IRS comes knocking on your door. And when that happens, you need to call the good old boys at the Tax Doctor. Let them do what they do best. Deal and negotiate with the IRS so you pay the lowest you can in back taxes that the law allows. We are a 100% U.S.-based company, and we've saved our clients millions over the years in back taxes. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, call my friends right now at the Tax Doctor and learn more.
800-507-3137. 800-507-3137. 800-507-3137. That's 800-507-3137.
When it comes to vaping, the truth can get clouded. So let's make it clear. Vaping is not safe for kids, teens, or young adults. It's just not.
Because vaping can put microscopic particles into your lungs.
And dangerous things like metals and volatile organic compounds into your body.
And nicotine, the same highly addictive substance found in regular cigarettes.
Nicotine can harm a person's brain development through their mid-20s.
Affecting learning, memory, attention, and impulse control. And priming the brain for other addictions.
Vaping products also come in kid-friendly flavors that can make them appealing to youth.
And many kids also use other drugs, like marijuana, in vaping devices.
With appealing flavors, high nicotine levels, and lots of promotion on social media,
many kids think vaping is harmless, but it's not.
So talk to your kids about the risks of vaping, because when you talk, they hear you.
Hi, this is James Fox. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
So we continue here with our guest, Mark Olley, our special guest co-host, Tim Swartz, talking about the book Crystal Skulls and Human Heads. And in our previous segment, Mark was acquainting us with some of the backstory of crystal skulls and skulls in general. Go ahead, please.
I think I'd reached the point where I said that the skulls were, if you like, a thread. It's like the central theme of the book, because the idea that we are in a skull or a depiction of a skull, we're staring at our own mortality. You know, there's kind of a set of eyes staring back. Whether it's a crystal skull or it's a fossilized skull from, you know, 400,000 BC or a skull of someone who died only yesterday, it speaks volumes to us. And I think that whole ethos is very deeply ingrained in us as a human species over centuries, absolutely centuries of having contact in one form or another with people who've passed on, you know, and they've died and they've gone to the other side. I think the crystal aspect, which is the silicon aspect, that's fascinating. That's something that's sort of moved forward with modern science. I was aware sort of a few years ago that things were beginning to pick up pace. Over here in the UK, I think it's Southampton University, they develop a glass disc that you can write data into, you can laser write into it, in 5D, five-dimensional storage space. It's 30 times the capacity of a normal CD. And essentially, because it's glass, it's silicon, it's written on a silicon disc. Now, for many years, there's always been this thing where people have said, oh, you know, if we could only get all of the right appropriate skulls together and they would all communicate with each other and it would change humanity and all this information would come out and we'd know so much, you know, and all this kind of talk came out as almost as a legend. It's become an urban legend. And most people are sort of sat there thinking, well, hang on a minute, this is a lump of rock. You know, how are we going to ever get anything out of a lump of rock? Well, it's not just a lump of rock. It's quartz crystal. It's quartz silica. And now we can read data from quartz silica. So it's not an urban legend anymore. It's more a case of we've got all of these pieces of quartz. We just don't know how to read them. Nobody's yet come up with a machine that can get any information out of them. But that doesn't mean it's not going to be possible. It could even be possible fairly soon. The technology that produced it was, I think, was dated back to 2013. So it's obviously moved on a lot since then. And then there's lots of other little gems like that in the book, looking at the way things are moving. Genetics features in there because they've analysed quite a lot of ancient human remains now and discovered, for example, in Neanderthal DNA, which was in itself a fairly recent discovery, there's another mystery race in there called Denisovans, which is a different kind of DNA. So they started looking at that, and then they discovered that there's a couple of other different types of DNA that come from the east, and another type of DNA that comes from the west. So already we're starting to rack up the species. And then you start to get these enormous elongated heads, the Paracas. Their DNA is coming back as different. You also then got Egyptians and Huns and other people with these enormous heads that appear to be a different species again. And then all of a sudden, out in on an island somewhere, I think it was in the Philippines, they ended up getting these tiny little miniature people, which would they call them the hobbits. There's a British Museum's got the skeleton of one of them, a reproduction of one. They're just tiny. When they were fully mature adults, they were never more than about 3'6" high. So you start looking at all this, and the archaeologists and the scientists are now saying, well, it was a Lord of the Rings-type world in the past. So in the same way in nature that you get giants of species and miniature versions of species, it appears that the same thing was true of humans. There was a huge variety of different humans with different DNA in the past. And actually what we've got now, it's devolved, and it's just we are literally the leftovers. You know, there's a bit of Neanderthal DNA that's found its way into different populations, but that's about it. It does speak to things being vastly more diverse in the past. There is a section at the end for UFO people and aliens and whatnot, and it looks at that, and it looks at where perhaps we all originated. That's the end of the world bit, you know. It's like we seem to have a repeating cycle of ending and starting again and ending and starting again. Yeah, that's kind of where the book goes. That's what it's all about.
The one section of the book where you talked about the Paracas.
Oh, yes.
Of skulls. We'll go into, you know, some more detail in it, but I just wanted to, a couple of years ago on a different show, I interviewed a gentleman who was an expert on researching giants and giant bones, especially the ones that had been dug up here in the United States in the 19th yeah. century. But he was saying that his research seemed to indicate that these giants originated from Mesopotamia, which yeah. I found your section interesting about the Paracas
yeah. yeah.
skulls with the same originating location.
I know, it's interesting because if you start looking at giants as an issue, most people are familiar with the biblical giants, the David and Goliath scenario, which very clearly puts giants then in the Middle East, because that the whole of like the biblical lands, Holy Land, etc., over in that neck of the woods seems to have these stories covering giants. But then in the book, in fairness to the United States, I do put the Pawksley Riverbed footprints, the giant prints that are found there, and there's prints found at Pawksley Riverbed alongside dinosaur prints as well. So it really upsets the apple cart. That whole area from the 1930s onwards is worth examining. But the Paracas, I mean, the Paracas would have been tremendously tall people, simply because the heads are three times the size of us. So a full-grown Paracas adult with a three times capacity cranium must have stood somewhere around 7 foot, maybe going up to 8 foot, just as a default height. You know, they were very tall beings. But I actually think that they're different species. The Paracas died out relatively recently in historical terms because we're still finding hair and skin and teeth and DNA, and, you know, there's lots of remains of these strange shaped skulls coming out. I know the preservation over there is particularly good, but they seem to have only died out, say, in the last 500-600 years. They've disappeared. Giants, on the other hand, seem to have disappeared maybe about 1,600 years ago. So maybe the last of the giants kind of fizzled out. you know, in the BC period before we flipped into the AD period. They kind of just fizzled out. It could prove to be the same with the Paracas, actually. They might have survived, hung on for, you know, maybe 100, 200 years longer before they fizzled out. But it seems to have been European diseases that took out the Paracas. Tuberculosis, flu, all sorts of things that we took over there to South America that you know, the indigenous population had no resistance to. But like you say, generally speaking, it does appear that most of humanity has migrated from the east to the west. But it depends. If you want to go down another rabbit hole, it depends if you believe that there is actually Noah's Ark out there on the Atlas Mountain Range. Not the Atlas Mountain Range, the... it's gone out of my head.
Ararat.
Ararat. Yeah, Ararat Mountain Range, sorry, yeah, where Mount Ararat is, which is on the Turkish border. You know, there's a brilliant... Ron Wyatt was an Australian archaeologist. He did a brilliant expose of an ark-shaped structure that's actually out there, which, I mean, I've looked at all his evidence and what have you, and it's pretty convincing that he's found what's left of Noah's Ark. Well, if that's the case, then... post-flood, everything comes from that direction. You know, everything scatters out from, you know, from the east to the west. I suppose the question is, how long ago did that happen? And how fast can people travel? You know, what world do we live in now? I try and get into that in the book a little bit. I try and cover it in Crystal Skulls. I look at time periods and dating methods. They're not as secure as people think. And it's very difficult to handle the very large numbers. You know, people talk about, you know, 400,000, 500,000, 600,000 BC. They talk about, you know, the Earth's been there for X number of million years, etc. These are just enormously large numbers. So it's very hard for the general reader to comprehend those kind of figures. I think we're on fairly secure dating going back maybe about 40,000 or 50,000 years. After that, it starts to get quite fluid. So, yeah, that's something I deal with in Crystal Skulls. So I'm not really sure where the flood falls.
Once again, our very, very special guest from the UK is Mark Olley. He is author of a book entitled Crystal Skulls and Human Heads, The Mystical History of Glass and the Extinction of the World. And it's published by Flying Disc Press, which is, of course, the Philip Mantle publishing company. And once again, he gives us a really... incredible array of really fine books. More okay. With Crystal Skulls and Mark and Gene and Tim. You're in
the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience, so I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
Stop aging now. Restore those joints. Boost your strength. Because it's official. NutriMedical has released the most exciting, powerful anti-aging supplement on the market. Dr. Bill Deagle's Red Deer Velvet DR has been approved by the U.S. Patent Office. Imagine stem cell rejuvenation all in one capsule without huge expense. Dr. Bill MD discovered that as an unborn baby grows in the mother's womb, he or she does not deteriorate or physically age. Red Deer Velvet DR, like the uterus, provides 300 biomolecules and 6 hormones protected in one special DR. PDR capsule that delivers lipid packages directly into your circulation. This patented technology bypasses the stomach and is released into the small bowel unaltered by digestive enzymes and stomach acid. Remember, Red Deer Velvet DR. Improve endurance, simulate your immune system, increase learning ability, and even improve sexual libido with Red Deer Velvet DR. Click NutriMedical.com. That's NutriMedical.com. Or call toll-free 888-212-8871 and get on the road to a newer, rejuvenated, happier you.